Hello, everyone, and thanks for coming back to WorldForge. WorldForge is a podcast by creators and for creators, where we use random prompts to invent just about anything you can imagine. Together, we'll make heroes and villains, ancient monsters and magical cities, and our hope is that we can inspire all the other creators and storytellers out there listening to do the same. So without any further ado, I'm Piper.
And I'm Sam.
And welcome to WorldForge. Hey everybody, and welcome back to WorldForge. Thanks for joining us again. This is our first non-spooky episode in a month, so it'll be hard to kind of reel in all of the creeps and scares that we've been channeling for a while now.
We finally escaped from the podcast dungeon that we had been living in for a month, and now we're back out under the sun.
Eyeing up some big turks as they strut past.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's a reference to the fact that there are giant turkeys that live immediately outside of our window that sometimes walk by while we're recording, and
yes,
it's really nice.
I love it. I actually frequently talk with my coworker about the turkey that lives in our neighborhood, because every morning when I am going and waiting for the bus, traffic is almost always backed up several blocks down the road. This is a highway, by the way. Because there's a turkey that's just like strutting his stuff in the middle of the street. And the other day I saw him actually charge a car. Normally cars are honking at him and they're trying to get around him and he's got his feathers all puffed up. The other day he like went after a vehicle and he's like, "I am a pedestrian, sir. You will wait your goddamn turn."
This turkey is the right of way.
It's so great. I love that turkey.
I like it. Yeah. This is so much more pleasant than the things we've been talking about for the last month or so.
Yeah.
I like it. And I think, so this week we have kind of a cool topic that we want to use to, in the same way as this fun little story of a turkey has kind of cleansed the palate of all the nastiness. We spent a lot of time talking about, you know, gross, nasty, evil, you know, spooky cults and murder crazies and all
murder
kinds
crazies.
Of stuff. Yeah, murder crazies.
I hate when crazies murder.
I think this week we need to get holy, you know? We need to come clean.
Yeah.
And
let us repent.
Yeah, repent for our wrongdoings,
spooky
our spooky sins from the last month or so. As such, we're going to be talking about divine servants.
Yes.
Servants of the gods, paladins and clerics and priests and holy warriors.
Yeah, people who get their powers from some high and mighty individual up on some cloud.
Yes.
Or down in some pit.
Exactly, yeah.
Who knows? I mean, they could be bad guys too.
Yeah, we say this will be a way to sort of wash away all our sins, but we, you know, we're going to be actually randomly generating these gods, so we may end up with some nasty gods anyway.
Exactly.
So
we might just be popping in a bloodbath and cleaning ourselves that way.
It's out of our control, really, if we continue down this path of vice that we have set ourselves upon this past month or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
so,
I
was going to say, probably what you were about
probably
to say.
Probably what I was about to say here, yeah.
Before we start making our own, you know, followers of the Almighty, should we talk about some of our favorite individuals that kind of fall under this category?
Yes, and that is what I was going to say. You read my mind.
I knew it. I also read your script notes.
Yeah, definitely we didn't rehearse this, and definitely I don't just have a bunch of notes sitting in front of me that say, like, talk about this. Okay. Piper, you, ladies first. You should go ahead and start, I think.
Thank you. Yeah.
Even though I suspect you may be stealing one of the ones that I'm going to talk about.
Well, if I'm not stealing one that you're about to talk about, I'm going to say one that will make you want to cry happy tears of joy. I think I want to talk about our good buddy Solaire, who praises the sun.
Oh, yes, of course.
He is a little knight friend in the games of Dark Souls, who can often be found praising the sun and giving good advice, I think.
Yeah.
I haven't played the game myself.
I'm glad you chose to talk about this character that you don't know a whole lot about.
That I kind of know about.
No, I think that's a great example. Solaire is a beacon of happiness and sunlight, literally, in a game that is otherwise beset with darkness and evil and just horrible everything. That's a perfect example of, you know, not necessarily someone who... I mean, I guess he kind of like fights for good, but more than that, he has like a righteous cause and like a drive that, you know, that pushes every action
exactly.
that he takes in that game is based on him just searching for his son and trying to come closer to the S-U-N, not his S-O-N, son.
Exactly.
And I also, that's a good example.
Oh, thank you. Before we move on from this wonderful little fella who just like makes everybody so happy every time yes. we see him, yes. I have to share my brilliant idea, okay. patent pending. But if anybody steals this from me and they make it a thing, it's fair because I want it to exist.
Yeah,
in the
well,
world.
You did put it on, you know, we're putting it out on air.
I'm so. Just saying, if you have the resources, do this. Okay, so everybody knows how a classic, like, wine bottle opener system, you stick it in, you twist the nozzle and the little arms raise up and up and up so that you can go and then push them down.
Yes.
Somebody needs to make a little cover for your wine opener so it looks like Solaire. So that way when you're twisting it, he's raising his arms to
praise the sun. Yes.
And then you can be like, hell yeah, wine time. Push the arms down, pop open a nice bottle.
I would pay so much money for this.
Dude.
Like, I would buy a $150 special edition pre-release of Dark Souls 4 if it came with one of those.
Right? Oh my god. I can't believe it hasn't been done already. I googled yeah. it after I had that idea and it's not out there yet. So if you have the resources or right. a 3D printer, make it happen. Please send me a free version.
Yeah.
and just
send us one.
Yeah, you can reap all the rewards so long as I know it's happened.
Okay. Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Thank you.
I had two here that I kind of wanted to talk about.
What is one of them?
I wanted to talk about, and this is a guy that I've kind of talked about on the show a couple times before, is the leader of the Brotherhood of the Cruciform Sword, Kazan from Indiana Jones
oh,
and
yes.
The Last Crusade.
Good.
Such a cool guy. He has a really cool look. He has a really cool voice. He's got a big kind of gnarly nose, which I also have.
Mm-hmm. A very handsome nose.
Yes. it makes me feel like you can have a big gnarly nose and a crazy mustache and be a heroic cool guy. He really gives me hope.
That checks
yeah.
two of my necessity boxes on
exactly.
my hot list, so duh.
We're getting gross now. I really like this guy. I had a D&D character that I played recently, actually, that I based largely on him. And if you are unfamiliar somehow with Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, basically it's the Indiana Jones where they go after the Holy Grail, and Kazan and his fellow members of the Brotherhood of the Cruciform Sword are this ancient tradition of, you know, like holy warriors that have protected the secrets of the Grail for thousands of years.
And they all wear little fezes.
They all wear little fezes. They all have like super cool, like little curly mustaches or little kind of Mario looking mustaches.
Doesn't he like reveal the medallion in his chest
no,
hair?
No, he's got a tattoo
on his chest.
Oh,
it's a tattoo in his chest hair.
Of the cruciform sword.
There
which
we
is,
go.
Yeah, like
okay.
a sword that looks like a crucifix, which is also super badass.
Very cool.
And again, I think that kind of gets at, you know, what we want to talk about isn't necessarily, it doesn't have to be your sort of run of the mill, you know, D&D cleric or D&D paladin or something. You know, it can be someone who just has a righteous motive,
mm-hmm.
A drive to protect something and to serve a higher power, even if he or she doesn't necessarily communicate directly with that higher power.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of in the realm of what we want to explore with this
yeah,
topic here.
Absolutely. I had a second one, but it has since escaped me. So if you have a second one, go for it. I'll try to
yes.
reconjure what my other example was that I had.
Yeah, well, my second one, I think, was kind of a foil to my first one here.
Was it Indiana Jones?
Yes. Joan of Arc was my second one. Someone
yeah.
who did, by definition, claim to have directly communicated with God.
Mm.
And I think that is the more traditional sort of archetype of a paladin or a cleric or someone that directly communes with a higher power to, you know, be granted vision or be granted some type of magical ability or prowess or something like that that gives them an edge in battle so that they can, you know, go and serve this god. Joan of Arc, total badass, like battled all across France when she was like 13 years old or something like that. Super, super cool. I don't really have any specific anecdotal stories about Joan of Arc? I mean, everybody knows who Joan of Arc is.
I mean, that is a good one.
Yeah, if you're interested in learning more, go to your local library.
In one of my, like, introductions to film class, I We watched some black and white silent film about Joan of Arc that was unbelievably moving.
Yeah.
It was just a bunch of very intense close-up shots of like people's faces and like her reaction and her emotion. I think there's like one shot where the actress, it just stays on her for like close to 5 minutes as she kind of cries in this courtroom and gives this like soliloquy about, you know, her cause and everything. It's very beautiful.
I feel like I saw this on an episode of that cinema YouTube channel. What's it called that I watch all the time?
I don't know. That one.
I don't remember. Cinefix. I feel like I saw a Cinefix episode where they talked about that. Here, I'm actually looking this up. Black and white Joan of Arc movie.
Yeah, search it. We'll find it. And while you're talking about that, I'm going to talk about the other one that I just remembered of another example in fiction of somebody who gets powers from a higher source that I love.
Yes.
So if you haven't seen Scott Pilgrim versus the World, you should definitely check that movie out because it's a total blast. If you really want to have your mind blown, I would say read the first comic, the first graphic novel, and then watch the movie, because the first, like, 10 minutes of the film is literally a shot-for-shot recreation of every hand-drawn panel in the comic. It's so
Which
neat.
Which sometimes works really well and sometimes doesn't work really well. I would argue that in the sake of Scott Pilgrim, it works very well.
Well, Scott Pilgrim made a Michael Cera character likable, so I think it's a successful movie in that sense.
Yeah.
But no, there's a character in that film, and he's played by the guy who did Superman in the original, well, not the original. He did it in the Superman...
Superman Returns.
Yes, that one, before we got Henry Cavill. But he plays this band member of one of... He's one of the...
Brandon Routh? Is that his name?
I don't know. But he's the basis to one of or to Scott Pilgrim's ex-girlfriend, but he's like a vegan and he has all these magical vegan powers that are granted to him because of that.
Yeah.
And so it makes him very powerful when they first fight one another, and he can like blast lasers out of his hands and his eyes glow white and his hair flows around. But it's hilarious because later in their fight, when he's kicking Scott Pilgrim's ass because he's way more powerful than him, the reason why Scott wins is because the vegan police show up to arrest this guy because he's broken the laws of like the vegan laws.
Yeah.
And they say to him, they pull out like this little checkbook and they're like, on the 5th of May, like, you like consumed ice cream. And he's like, ice cream isn't vegan. And then they flip to another thing and he's like, then on the like 8th of May, you ate a chicken nugget. And he's like, a chicken nugget isn't vegan. And so they revoke his vegan powers and he's weakless, which allows Scott to defeat him.
I think so that funny. Actually is a really interesting... You could easily adapt that to a D&D setting if you wanted to say, you know, have a cleric or a paladin that worships a god or goddess of the harvest, right? And the healthier they eat, the more power they get or something, you know? They're kind of like a Captain Planet type where they, you know, they gain their powers from saving the earth.
It's so good. And honestly, that movie, kind of what we were saying when we were on a recent episode with our buddies at We Speak Common about how we see D&D in everything.
Yes.
The Scott Pilgrim plotline is very much like a D&D campaign.
Yeah, it's
the way he has to combat all these different bosses.
Exactly.
To make his way to the end goal.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they all have their rules and their stats.
Yeah, everyone has a different mechanic that they have to use to fight, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I like that. The movie, by the way, is The Passion of Joan of Arc.
Oh, good.
It has an 8.2 on IMDb and a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh.
So maybe go watch that.
And I think it's only like 45 minutes. It's pretty short.
Thank God.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful.
I think it's cool. I think it was Cinefix or something that I saw a review of that or something, and they said it was good too. So I don't know.
Cool.
Curly Piper's more film cultured than I am. So.
Well, I was a film minor, so
yeah, of course.
We watch a lot of movies.
But we should go ahead and get into our prompts here, and we're going to be doing prompting in kind of two stages here this time. So we're going to do our first prompt is going to be a deity that we are going to get, and our second prompt is going to be our traditional prompt, which will be sort of the basis for our character. So we'll have kind of a two-pronged attack here on how to build this week. So Piper, do you want to go ahead and generate the first deity that we'll be working with?
So I have a deity here. The question is it yours or mine?
I think last time you took the first one, so I'll take the first one this time.
Okay, well, you lucky so-and-so. Your deity that your individual will be praying to is called Cheyenne. And Cheyenne is the god of desire and fear.
Ooh, okay.
It says here that Cheyenne is quite beautiful, with ebony skin, waist-length flowing auburn hair, and eyes the color of golden sand. It is a man. He is very tall and very muscular and often seems angry. He usually wears a hooded cloak dyed light green and light gray. He is also associated with deceit, arrogance, and music. He is often worshipped by merchants, and his fellow followers can be primarily distinguished by the shrines in their homes. There are more than a few shrines to him in large cities. There are many myths involving this unhappy relationship with Seutl, which doesn't elaborate on. He is the cousin of some other god, and he is known for sometimes placing obstacles in the way of mortal heroes.
I assume that other god is something that's generated on that page. I think it generates like a couple gods at a time.
Yes, there is someone further down.
Yeah, okay. We don't have to read about that.
Yes.
we could do that. Well, so we'll there's a site that we're using to generate these. We'll talk about that in the rec room actually later tonight. But just know that we have only the most powerful of random generation tools at our fingertips here on this show.
So I
really like this. Can you actually spell Shaen for me?
Yes, it's spelled S-H-A-E-N.
Okay, perfect. This is a cool sounding god. I think this could be a god that kind of goes good or evil. I'm not really getting super strong vibes other than that.
I mean, fear.
He's associated with fear and deceit. But I could see that being kind of a neutral thing too. Of saying everyone has desires and everyone has wants, and maybe I sort of stand in the middle that, you know, because you can lie to help someone.
It's
or
true.
You can lie to harm someone in the same way.
Yeah.
What I think is most interesting about that is the idea that merchants would worship
That's
him,
what
especially
stood out to me too. Yeah, I like that a lot.
So like slippery grifters would pray to him to be able to, you know, get better deals when they take their cattle to market or whatever. I think that's really, really neat. I like
that's
that.
Cool.
Okay, so there's my god.
I'm gonna give you a random word prompt. Interesting. Well, I'm gonna stick with that. Okay, so the first word that I got, and you can create, like we said, this can be a warrior, this can be like a priest or a cleric, whatever you feel. Your word is birth.
Birth. Ooh, okay. Well, I mean, strong Jesus vibes right away. Was I conceived immaculately? That's a question we could be asking here, right?
You could say that you were born into a family that prayed to this god, so that's what you were raised with.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of an interesting take as well.
You could be a midwife, somebody who delivers babies into the world. And maybe with every baby that is born, they make some sort of like sacrifice or something to their god.
I convince everyone that I'm a midwife.
Yeah.
Because I'm so deceitful. And really, I'm like, I'm going to help you with your baby. And then I steal all their jewels.
Dang.
while they're giving labor for 72 hours because it's the Middle Ages or whatever.
Exactly. And they die most of the time. And if they don't, you just like slit their throat. And you're like, it was a complication of birth.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's your baby.
The baby was trying to come out of the neck. It was so weird.
Like, so
I don't know, weird. Stupid baby. Honestly, okay, I like that. I'll start kind of cooking up some ideas here. If you want to get your prompts going, while I think about that.
Okay, so what I got was I think the way to pronounce this is quarter.
Okay.
It's K-O-U-T-R. Quarter.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's
one of those like Nordic things, or like Baldur. You know, there's like a weird way you pronounce the R at the end. I don't know.
Right, totally. Okay, so Quarter is the god of oaths. They are almost plain looking, with copper skin, long flowing red brown hair, and eyes the color of dark earth. He is medium height and muscular, seldom smiles. He usually wears opulent robes dyed light gray. He is also associated with dance and the undead. Ooh, I like that.
Oh, that's the coolest combination.
He is often worshipped by warriors. His few but dedicated followers can be primarily distinguished by the holidays they observe. There are a respectable amount of shrines to him in large cities. There are many myths involving his tempestuous relationship with this other god and his brother, and he's known to sometimes hinder mortal leaders.
Yeah.
Okay, a god of oaths, who is muscular and tan and associated with dance and the undead.
I like, okay,
that's really
so
cool.
The oaths thing is maybe he expects, maybe he has a very high opinion of himself, and he expects that any warrior, they just should pledge an oath to him. Like, why wouldn't they pledge an oath to me? Anyone who doesn't, those are the people that he hinders, right?
Yeah.
So he has the power to kind of, he has like vast, far-reaching powers. He has the power to help or hinder anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And he just picks and chooses for very petty reasons
Yeah.
who he helps and doesn't. It's basically, if people worship him or not.
Definitely. I think what's standing out to me, one of the things that I like, so is the fact, I like the thing about the dance and the undead, and yes. that he is, his followers are distinguished by the holidays that they observe.
Yeah.
So I think my individual that I'm going to create is definitely going to be somebody who they partook in the festivities that came through their town mm-hmm. around this individual mm-hmm. and they were so swept up in it that they decided to devote themselves to it.
Okay.
So, and I think it should definitely be you and I outside of the podcast were talking recently about some different Native American traditions that we had come across.
We never talk outside of the podcast.
Nope. Silent always. But one of them that this makes me think of is in the, I think it's the Dakota tradition. When a young girl becomes a woman, one of the things that she has to do in this week-long trial
yeah.
is she has to, on the last night, she has to dance all night long and she can't stop dancing. And I think that's part of it, is that part of this ceremony will do a night of dancing where everyone who partakes has to keep going. And I think somebody was invited to come up. My person, I want them to be like a young girl. She was invited to come along to these festivities, and she partook in the dance, and it kind of hypnotized her. And by the end of the night, she was totally devoted to this deity, and she pledged an oath to court her.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that. So your warrior is like a young girl.
Mine is a young girl. I want to say she is probably 14.
Okay, cool. So a Joan of Arc type figure.
Yeah, perhaps.
Exactly. Okay.
Let me generate my word. Ooh, okay. I got dust.
Dust. Okay, like bone dust. There you go.
So maybe she resides, or she comes from a desert town.
Yeah. Or maybe she lives on the streets, just like dirty, dusty.
Yeah.
Like she's trying to elevate herself by worshiping a god to become something bigger than this urchin's street rat's life that she's born into.
I think that's definitely part of it.
Yeah?
I think I like the picture of maybe she's part of sort of like a traveling society of individuals who kind of like roam the dunes mm-hmm. And things like this. And while they're traveling, they come across this festival, and she is tempted by it and goes to it. And during the dance and in the visions she sees, she gets premonitions of places that are like that have water and greenery, and that's part of what convinces her to pledge herself
to go on a holy quest for this.
Exactly. Yeah, she wants something beyond the sand, beyond the dust. Mm. And so she's going to leave the dust behind her.
That's cool. I like that. I a journey inspired by this god is a cool thing. So, I mean, that's what we want. That's someone who's like established as a figure in this faith already. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think when the day after, and she kind of emerges definitely hungover from these festivities, and there's a person there, I think it's this guy, probably the gentleman who like invited her to this event in the first place. And he would say to her, he would remind her that she pledged this oath last night, that this is now her calling. And even though she is kind of alarmed by this, that she would make such a drastic decision, I think she decides, no, I still feel the passions within me that I felt last night, even though that was a bit enhanced by my intoxication and all those good drinks that you gave me, but I'm going to go with you guys, and he's going to train her.
Cool. So she's going on this holy pilgrimage with like a band of other warriors or travelers or whatever.
Yes. These disciples of Kotur, who I think travel around and they throw these parties for the sake of like bringing people into their religion.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I definitely want to follow the religion that has the coolest parties.
Right.
You know? I'm not trying to go to like a boring, like Mormon cult party. You know, I want to turn up.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah. So I think the first step in her journey is them taking her back to sort of their base camp, their place where they go to kind of relax and make plans for their next goings out. And that's
cool.
Where he's going to train her initially. And then, but I think I like the idea that it's established early on that he says, now it's our calling to court her, to go out and get more people to sign oaths by throwing these celebrations. But that doesn't necessarily have to be what you do. You might have a different calling. You might have a different quest. But
so they're sort of like if the Jehovah's Witnesses were just like crazy party animals.
Yeah.
Basically. They're like, we have to get as many people to sign up as possible. But instead of going door to door and having you, you know, buy a Bible or whatever, they invite you to a sick dance party, a sick rave. And then you like do peyote and then go on a pilgrimage.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Why isn't this the tactic that all religions are using?
I know, right? That sounds awesome. If you do some of our like holy weed or whatever.
Yes. Dude, we'll get you so high. There's so many babes here. So many hot dudes. All right, Sam, what are you thinking about with your god of, it's fear and desire, right?
Fear and desire and deceit, or he's associated with deceit. Okay. So I think...
And your word was...
It was birth. So birth. Okay.
What I kind of want to do is
I think because merchants typically worship this god as a sneaky sort of snake oil salesman kind of guy. That's how I'm sort of picturing him, right? Is mm-hmm. that he'll sell you things by scaring you into thinking that you need it. You know, he'll say, well, if you don't get this today, if you don't like buy into this program that I'm offering you, then you're gonna get cancer all up in your body and you're gonna die. And I'm sorry. You know, I think he kind of tricks people that way. Like, that's the deceitfulness, that he scares people into thinking they need him. And
that's,
I think,
very interesting, because that to me implies that your god is here on the mortal plane himself.
Yeah,
doing
yeah.
this. Okay.
I see him as a guy who just kind of goes around, because I think it's fun for him to just try and trick mortals. So he goes and he's wheeling and dealing with people all the time.
So he's kind of like a devil in that way.
Yeah, exactly. And I think my character, my divine servant here, is born into a rich merchant family that made their way in the world without relying on the beguiling tactics of Cheyenne, this god. I think that they're very proud of the fact that they made an honest fortune as merchants, and they're very much against this church. But he basically, you know, comes up and he has really big shoes to fill. He needs to fit into this super rich merchant family, but he just can't hack it as an honest salesman. So maybe he gives into the temptation, mm-hmm. you know, to get this power to sort of trick people into, you know, buying what kind of snake oil he's selling.
Very cool.
He starts worshiping Cheyenne because Cheyenne has this sort of gift that he can give him of a silver tongue that he can make anybody buy anything from him.
Very cool. So that kind of touches on what I was just going to ask you. I feel like we need to establish, what are the perks that you receive to worshiping this god? And you just said that your guy like gets this silver tongue.
Yeah.
He becomes more persuasive.
Exactly.
Are there other perks that he gets?
I think that's kind of the biggest thing, is that he just becomes extremely persuasive. He becomes okay with... Not just good at manipulating people, but his morals kind of start to slip away as he gets further and further into this religion. And I think he just becomes used to this sort of life of luxury that he's granted, but he is maybe a little bit ashamed, or he knows that his family will disown him if he ever admits to them that, you know, he didn't get this wealth through his own... you know, his own skill. He got it because he sort of sold his soul to Cheyenne.
I imagine that growing up, he would have been aware of this god. And I bet it's something that his family looks down upon.
Yes,
that they
exactly.
say, followers of this guy are cheating. They don't know how to work from the sweat of their brow and roll up their sleeves and do it themselves.
Exactly.
And he decides to go and do that to better himself in his family's eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, he's an appealing figure, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they say he's this sort of like beautiful, flawless, ebony... you know, man, I mean, I picture him just kind of walking into a room and commanding everyone's presence immediately. You know, mm-hmm. everyone would just be so enamored and hanging on his every word all the time.
Yeah.
I think anybody who is in the position of, you know, of this kind of poor merchant who can't make it would see that and say, yeah, of course I want that. I want to be just like that. And, you know, because maybe he's not as strong-willed as his predecessors, he gives in very, very quickly.
Cool.
And I think that's how a lot of the followers of this god he's sort of the god of like multi-level marketing, you
nice.
Know, like, he kind of like tricks all
knows
these
how to prey on the yes. simple-minded.
Yeah, he finds people who are, you know, they kind of want to get rich quick, or they want to be able to, you know, they don't want to do things the hard way. They want to be able to trick other people into doing things for them. Really, he's kind of tricking all these people into you know, because he thinks it feels good too.
Your god, his temples would definitely be a pyramid for his pyramid schemes. I'm just saying.
Absolutely right. It has to be a pyramid. Yeah. Oh man, I'm drawing a little pyramid on my notes right now here,
good,
so we can
good.
See.
I think shrines to KOTOR would just be. They would look like festive tents. They're kind of impermanent, I think.
I like that. It's, you know, sort of like a little encampment, a little festival encampment. They just show up. They set up a bunch of stuff. There's like streamers and fireworks and confetti and stuff around. And the any place can be a shrine to KOTOR. It's just about what's happening in that place, not about the physical, you know, structure of it.
Exactly. Cool. Very cool. So, gifts or talents or abilities that would be given to my lady, who I'm just going to like try and come up with a name at the top of my head. I want to call her, what was your god's name?
My god's name was Shan.
Okay. Cause I had SH names popping into my head and I don't want to take that. Her name is, I want to say, Calliope.
Like Calliope?
Say Calliope.
Calliope.
Yeah. That's her name. I'm going to say it a few times. Calliope. So I don't forget it. Calliope. Okay.
I'm going to write it down for
Thank
you.
Thank
you. Don't
worry. Young Calliope. So if she has signed KOTOR's black book.
Yeah.
She's pledged her oath. And she's now been training with her new KOTOR master for, I think, about a year and a half.
I keep just picturing you keep saying his name and it sounds like KOTOR. Like, I picture this guy just like voguing around, like snapping his fingers all the time.
Quarter, like a little. I was like, oh yeah, a nice little coin. But no, so Calliope, I think one of the things that you get with the god of oaths, with the dance and the undead. I have to bring the undead into this.
Yeah, which I would think this would be a thing that would be right up your alley. You love this kind of spooky, you know, spooky pacts and things like that.
Oh,
that's
definitely.
Really, really great.
I love that. I feel, because when I think of Dance and the Undead combined, it makes me think of sort of like a Dia de los Muertos sort of a thing, of like a Day of the Dead celebration.
Yeah.
And so I feel as if maybe part of like why dance is such a thing is because there's sort of this connection in this religion that like part of the gift of the signing the oaths is it gives you, you can untap sort of knowledge of the afterlife.
Okay.
And I think when you do these dances and you like get into this kind of metaphysical high of like dancing all night from pure exhaustion, whatever other chemicals you're ingesting, people have these visions and they see their perhaps past loved ones, or they are able to kind of peer into the other plane when they do these things.
Or maybe, okay, so maybe when they dance. So there's sort of like a Wild Hunt kind of thing going on here. Like all of these lost souls follow around, you know, these bands, right? And whenever you dance, that's how they kind of communicate with them. And you can access the memories and experiences and skills of all of these dead worshippers. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
And so if you do these things, you can have knowledge from like lifetimes past.
I like that.
So, yes.
And you get it for like a short period of time, you know,
right.
Like, you know, you get it for like a couple days or whatever. So if you're like, oh man, I really need to, you know, I'm traveling around, I got shot with an arrow, my armor's messed up, I need to do this dance so I can commune with like a blacksmith or something.
Yes.
So I can learn to fix this. I think it would be really cool if part of this religion, when you enter into it, the god sort of pledges an oath to you as well.
Yeah, I like that.
And they say, okay, as long as because you served me in life, in death, I will give you this, that when you are summoned to, you know, grant your memories and your skills to our living servants, maybe they get at like, while they're dancing, their body remanifests on earth. So they're like, as they are living, as though they were living again while they dance. And as soon as they stop dancing, they go back to the underworld.
Yeah, I like that. I think pledging to KOTOR is a way to kind of guarantee that you won't just necessarily be cast into oblivion.
Yeah.
You will have ties to potentially come back again.
So imagine this. Imagine you're just a simple traveler and you hear the sound, you know, out in the middle of nowhere of this festival, and you see the lights and the fireworks and the flickering flames of a fire.
And all the hot ladies dancing.
And all the hot ladies dancing.
And all the hot dudes rubbing oil on themselves.
Yeah, and you you can hear that from a distance from the road, and you pull your cart over, you stop your horse, and you, you know, go walk into this encampment to see what's going on, and you kind of blink your eyes, and you know, suddenly everything's gone. Like, you know, they stop dancing and they just disappear. The party is like completely absent now. Like, it can come as soon as it can go, because as soon as they stop dancing, they stop sort of manifesting physically.
Well, the ghosts would.
Yeah, the ghosts would. Yeah, but you know, if a bunch of these people that are dancing are ghosts, and suddenly there's just, oh, I thought it was like 150 people at this party, and it's just like five servants now that are like traveling that. Around.
That's cool.
That's such a cool, spooky thing to come across, that you would think it's this huge gathering,
right?
And suddenly it's just
only
this
some of them are alive.
Tiny, yeah, you would never know.
That is so cool. Okay, the other thing that I was thinking about too is, because you know how sometimes people with these abilities, they travel around and they use their talents to make money, right?
Yes.
Sort of like a gypsy would tell your fortune, you know, to make her way or his way. I like the idea that what would we call these people? They wouldn't be a paladin. Is a paladin a warrior based?
A paladin would be like a holy warrior, right?
Okay. Either a paladin or a cleric of couture, I think.
They could also just be like priests or acolytes or like servants. I mean, they don't necessarily have to be aligned to a specific like D&D type archetype, you know. They could be like, being an acolyte is like a job, basically, or like a monk or something like that, you know.
Cool. I would want Calliope to be more of like a warrior sort of sect.
Cool.
But I like the idea that if you were in a large city, right, and you wanted information about somebody who had died recently, you could seek out a priest of couture or a dancer of couture, and you could give them, you know, your question, and for a certain price, they will conduct this ceremony. Well, they will do this dance for you and come to you the next day and tell you what they have found out.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. What style of dance do they do? Like, we watch a lot of Dancing with the Stars. Like, if you were to, first off, what star would Courter most be most well paired with, right?
Oh my god.
And what style of dance? Do they do like a jazz? Do they do a samba? Do they do a tango? Like, what is their dance like?
A foxtrot feels a bit like a nice, like hot and fast. See, I'm picturing lots of spinning around, like people dancing definitely around a giant pyre that they build.
Of course.
The flames have to be 20 feet tall. And these people are just like spinning and spinning and spinning.
That's with a lot of like jangly, like beads and coins and things hanging, and like scarves spinning around all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was picturing too.
Yeah.
That's very ghost-like, right? So, you know, maybe there's a reason for that, right? So if the living acolytes of Quarter wear these really billowy, drapey gowns and garments, so that when they spin, they kind of look like a ghost flowing through the air. So that kind of gives them this connection to the dead.
They can channel their energy to part the ether with the blur of their garments
and
allow the ghost to come through.
And the jangling coins are like jangling bones of like skeletons or something like that, kind of.
I freaking love this. Okay, let's go back to you. Okay, so your guy, he has betrayed his family by praying to this god to become a silver-tongued king of the courtroom.
So I think what's more interesting about him isn't how he did that. I don't think it's hard for people to pledge to Shan. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole point is that he makes it really easy, you know?
Yeah. Bless you.
Excuse me, sneeze. The whole point is that Shan makes it... Hold on, I'm going to sneeze again. I'm going to write down here 37 minutes and 20 seconds. Oh, I lost my sneeze. Okay, anyway.
Show and giveth and show and taketh away.
Yes, yes. Maybe I'll cut that out. Maybe I won't.
Leave it.
Okay, so I think the whole point of this religion is that, you know, he wants it to be really accessible. He wants it to be easy for people to get in. So the more interesting story isn't how he becomes a follower of Shan. What's much more interesting to me is what happens when his family gets together for, like, you know, fantasy Christmas dinner.
They're
talking about, like, oh, you know, you're doing so well. We saw that new castle you bought over in the next city over. How are you affording that? And he's like trying to come up with a lie to convince him, you know, that
isn't
based on
he's probably filled with fear.
Yeah,
he's part of his contract.
He's terrified that his family's going to find out. So he's constantly coming up with stories, and maybe his family probably is a little bit suspicious because they're like, we don't really feel like we're getting the whole picture here. So it'd be sort of him always having to be thinking several steps ahead to try and stop people from figuring out how he got all this wealth, because that would be the most horrible thing for him, for people to know that he didn't just get it by his own.
Can he not use his silver-tongued abilities to dissuade his family?
I think maybe there would be some kind of a some kind of rule as to who this beguiling skill works against. Maybe it doesn't work on people who are very close to you.
Because I like the idea.
Because it's like effectively like a spell that he's casting.
Well, here's the thing. I like the idea. If this family for a decent amount of time has been very like high and mighty about followers of this god, I think this god has had its eye on them for a while now.
Oh,
and said, I need to infiltrate these guys. If I could get them if I can get them to pray to me,
I like that.
Then I've bested them. So he found the weakest link in their chain. He's corrupted this one individual.
Yes.
And I bet he's saying to him, he's like, if you can get other members of your family to join me, then I will give you, like, you will reap such amazing rewards.
And it makes sense
that
this powerful merchant family that, you know, they haven't needed to be tricky and deceitful to make a fortune. You know, how cool would it be if he said, well, I was tricky enough that I tricked the, you know, the most honest guy in the, you know, in
right?
the room. The person who was least willing to submit to my... To service to me.
Yeah.
That makes total sense.
Cool.
I like that a lot.
Sweet.
Maybe there is some kind of like a, maybe my merchant throws a dinner or something for his family, like a huge ball when he cuts the ribbon on his new castle or whatever that he builds and he
breaks a bottle of champagne against the wall.
He smashes a bottle of champagne on it and he throws this huge gala event and he invites all his family to say, hey, come look, I've made it just like you guys have. This mm-hmm. is what you expect of me. I need to put on a show. And maybe Shan takes on a physical form and shows up at this party because
very
he
cool.
just can't help himself. You know, he's sitting there like, you know, that meme of Willy Wonka where he's like,
yes.
got his, you know, he's like, really? Tell me
yes.
more. Like, he's just sitting in the corner, like eating a chicken leg and just like, yeah, uh-huh.
So
what's going on?
I'm picturing his appearance being very Mask of the Red Death.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I also see him, they said he's very like tall and slender, and I think he's extremely fashionable. He's very sassy. He's always like sashaying around as he
sass
walks.
Master.
Yeah, he's a total sass master. like I said, he completely commands a room when he walks in.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can not be paying attention to this guy.
Does he do the SNL Tyler Perry thing where he comes in just throwing money around?
I probably.
He's like, hello,
honestly.
It's me. I'm here.
I mean, he is like the, you know, he's sitting at the top of the pyramid. Of
yes,
this,
exactly.
This multi-level marketing pyramid. He's got the money to throw around.
Carried in by like Egyptian-looking guys
yeah,
on like
totally.
A golden chair.
He has the like Xerxes from 300 thing where, yeah, he's on like a giant palanquin with a bunch of like, you know, like little Egyptian slaves like carrying him around.
I love the
but
idea.
They don't, none of them think they're slaves.
Right?
Like they all are like, oh no, we're his employees. You're not. You're like the bottom of the pyramid.
Oh
like,
my God.
He's totally taking advantage of your labor.
I love the idea that we started with him being like, I'm going to discreetly infiltrate this party, but he can't not make a big show.
Yeah, exactly.
And he has
exactly.
to always come in. They're like, who's that guy? And he's like, I'm no one. Pay no attention
yeah,
to me.
I think that's maybe his weakness is that he thinks he's being really discreet, but he's just the most, you know, ostentatious, obvious person in the room at all times.
Yes.
Everyone knows he's like the equivalent of you know, old like early MySpace pages where people would put a million like blingy GIFs
yes.
Tiled 1,000 times in the background. Like he's
yes.
just so shining in your eyes at all times.
I think he's constantly like summoning birds of paradise to perch on his arm.
Yes, exactly.
And they're like, where did that bird come from?
Yeah.
And then he'll just like blow his nose on its feathers and throw it away.
Totally.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Just constantly birds flying through windows. Like, we keep closing these damn windows. Like, who keeps opening these? I
awesome.
Love that.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, this guy sounds like he'd be a real blast at parties, to be perfectly
we both
honest
have
with
two
you.
Party gods.
Yeah.
I freaking love it. This makes me think of one question I think we have to ask is, what do the gods get out of this? From having the more followers they have, what does that equal in their realm?
Well, I think for
that's kind of the goal for them. Why do they want so many followers?
For Shane, I think he just feels the more people that he kind of has under his thumb, the more he feels like, yeah, I am a cool, savvy manipulator. You know, mm-hmm. for him, he has this drive where he has to constantly be tricking people into doing stuff for him, right? And the more people he has doing that, and the more his followers go and find mm-hmm. people to do that, the more he feels he has succeeded in that.
So maybe in the world of gods, he is trying to prove himself to some other deity or something.
Yeah, maybe that's a story for another time.
That's a good point. We're focusing on
yeah,
the
we're
prayers
focusing too
to
much
these people.
On the gods. Yeah,
I think one thing that I mean, because KOTOR's big thing is like the god of oaths, and I think getting people to sign a way there to pledge themselves to him is this big deal. Yeah. And I think this is a god who has to meet a quota.
Okay.
And maybe it has something to do with the balance of the universe. Maybe it's that large, is that like by every millennium he has to get a certain number of people to join him and spread his word, otherwise something else will happen.
Okay.
And so that's why I kind of like the idea that these are good people, and that's why it's very positive to get people to join this his religion and to follow him and to pray to him. It's for a good cause. So it's not, it doesn't have malicious intent.
Maybe it's like a budgetary thing where it's like if there aren't enough employees in the underworld or whatever, they're going to cut the higher god is like, we don't need to send funding to the underworld anymore. There's not enough dead dancing around in there. We can stop the upkeep on your break room or whatever,
or something like that. Maybe it is a way of like managing souls. Yeah. Because if people who pledge to him are able to come back, that's kind of a way of keeping the underworld uncrowded.
That's a good point.
Yeah
that's a really good point, that he's kind of trying to cycle people in and out of the underworld so that it's not just like, you know, they're not just packed in there like sardines all the time.
Exactly.
He wants
yeah.
to give people a few moments in the real world again,
yeah.
where there's space.
So I think that is part of it. I just want to say, before we like add in our modifiers, kind of shake things up a little bit, that I want Calliope, from where she began to where she is now, she has since completed her training with her paladin master, let's say, and
so she has fighting skills. This is several years later. She's traveled around and done this.
Okay. Exactly. She's now, her dance style, similar to what we see in like Game of Thrones, about how water dancing is taught to Arya, her fighting style is very dance like because dancing is a huge part of what
she
does.
So it's more like fencing and yeah,
exactly. Kind of I think like she has a lot of close-handed weapons, and a lot of her fighting style is like kind of spinning around, getting real close to somebody and like stab, slice, and using
her scarves and drapes and things like that to kind of disguise her movements.
Definitely.
And yeah, that's really, really neat.
Cool.
I like that.
So I think they're definitely kind of more assassin types.
I like that. And I would say, I don't think that Cheyenne's followers really are warriors at all. I think mm-hmm. the way that they serve him is just by getting more people to follow. And,
cool.
I think that they probably do have to pay tribute to him. And it's not that they have to, you know, do a blood sacrifice or anything like that. I think they literally just give him gold.
Well,
I think that's
what
it
makes
is.
Sense.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's a god of merchants and a god of you know, getting the better of people. Like, what more apt way to prove that you've gotten the better of someone than to get them to buy you a beer or whatever?
Well,
you know?
I'm going to make a comparison that you have famously made many times and say it's just the Catholic Church saying,
yeah,
give us alms,
it is.
Like give us the
it
money so we can
totally
make God
is.
Like you.
Oh, man, yeah. If you want to hear our
Got
strong opinions on Catholicism, actually, you should go listen to a recent episode we recorded with our good buddy Rory Spence on Dog Hair Presents, where we talk about just how much fun the Catholic Church is. It's a really great time.
For the record, I have no opinion on it.
Yeah.
Sam is the one who's recovering
Catholic.
I
was raised Catholic, and I've just barely escaped. So, I think that's kind of a good template for this guy. What is the tribute that the followers of Corder have to pay?
So,
to gain favor, to curry favor with this god.
I would say more oath signings.
Okay.
I think there are these like sacred scrolls
so
probably
they're both
that they carry with
just
them.
Just like multi-level marketing guys. They just want to get more people in to do
I
it,
think
I
so.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that's a big part of it. So there needs to be a hierarchy of his followers who, like the people who are on the very top, who are essentially like the cardinals or the bishops or whatever, these are the individuals who they carry these sacred scrolls where they gather all the signature of the people who they sign their oaths and they pledge to Couture. So that I think is a big thing. The more signatures they get, that is the way that they pledge to this god, and the stronger their power becomes.
I also picture this probably like a really cool, like how the Fates have you know, the threads of time or whatever. There's probably like a master list somewhere that has the names of all of the dead and all of history or something. And you can reference that, you know, if you have access to that list, if a mortal stole that list or something from you know, whoever Quarter's assistant manager is or whatever.
Yes.
You know, maybe they would have the ability to summon any one of these names using this list. There's this cool holy artifact.
Yes. Basically. There's definitely like a master shrine in the mountains somewhere where there is just this immense like scroll that is like miles and miles long. And it's just like hung everywhere.
Maybe it's like a scroll that the scroll is literally infinite. Like the scroll goes till the end of time or something. You could never read all the way to the end of the scroll.
I think there's a magical connection to this master scroll and then all the satellite scrolls. Whenever somebody like signs a name, it appears he's kind of possessed and he writes their signature onto this scroll and he's documenting the people.
I'm picturing Mr. DNA from Jurassic Park being like, if you read scrolls like these for 8 hours a day, it'd take you 65 years to read the whole thing.
If you dance real well, you can commune with dinosaurs.
I love that.
I think definitely like once every like 5 years, all the master followers of this faith, they come to this big temple and there's just like the biggest, sickest dance party you've ever fucking seen.
A crazy rave party.
Oh,
all the time.
Everybody bones everybody. You dance for a week straight. Everyone leaves with six-pack abs, guaranteed.
Of course.
There's like 1,000 medical tents ready to give you water and like juice boxes and apples to make sure everyone's happy and healthy.
It's just like holy Burning Man, basically.
But way better and cleaner and not gross and weird.
It's like Burning Bush Man. That's what it is.
Oh my God, yes. That's what we should call this episode.
That's what we should call this, Burning Bush Man. Great.
So I think, let's do our
modifiers. Add some modifiers in here. I think we've gotten a lot out of this on our own.
This is real good.
We're gonna go ahead and pull up our patented wheel spinning technology here. And Piper, I got the first prompt, so I think you should get the first modifier here. And I'm watching it spinning right now. Where is it gonna stop? No one knows. You got such a good one. Lightning round.
Oh, boy. Okay. So I have to generate five words, right?
Five words. We generate five new words. And you have to, as quick as you can, incorporate all five of these words into your creation.
Okay. So I've generated my five words using a random word generator.
Do you want me to write them down for you, or will you remember?
You should write them down for me.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go. My words are rare, sort, elated, scale, and charming.
Okay.
Okay, scale stands out to me immediately. So Calliope is going to attend this great ceremony that happens in the Master Temple once every 5 years. She is pilgrimaging.
Pilgrimaging sounds good.
Yeah, she's pilgrimaging.
Sounds like the way you would say that.
There,
on a pilgrimage.
Exactly. She's headed there with her master, who has taught her everything. He's going to be her chaperone, essentially, for her first big big party. And
he signed the safety waiver for her so that she could get into the party. As a legal guardian.
Exactly. I think the thing is, so this guy, he's like older than her, but not terribly older than her. He's maybe at most like 8 to 10 years older than her. And I think that's where I'm going to use charming. She definitely has a crush on her master.
Oh, man. Okay, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
This seems a little skeevy. A 13-year-old going to Burning Man with like a 22-year-old guy.
No, okay. So she was 14 when she started. She is now 16 years old.
Okay, so she is older now.
Yeah.
We're still kind of on the border of skeeviness here.
It is a little skeevy, but this is also medieval times. She should probably be married with five kids now.
Okay, that's a good point. It was a different time.
A different place. Okay, so her master.
She's like an old spinster at this point, basically. She doesn't have 17 kids
exactly.
at age 16.
Okay, so her master is very charming, and she's very excited to go on this trip with him, and I think she thinks it's maybe going to be like a date or like a romantic vacation. He does not feel that
way
at all.
She is elated
about going on this trip, and she's like, ooh, I'm gonna make a move. It's gonna be great. He's gonna like me back.
Yeah.
I know it.
Yeah.
I think when they get there, there is this interesting I think to enter, they have like these big scales that are at the door, and you have to.
I want to know what these scales measure.
I want to put money in them, but I'm like, they don't really care about money. I feel like you have to. Okay, here's what it is. This is so dumb. You have to like do a little dance off with somebody who's there.
Oh, okay.
And all the people waiting in line, they cast their votes and they throw their little chips onto one side of the scale.
This is so like spring break.
It is, right?
Cabo.
So you have to like do a cool little dance move. And so if people vote on your scale, then you, okay, I think everybody who has an invitation gets to come in. But if the scale weighs in your favor, you get like a special VIP.
You get a VIP.
Wristband.
You get to go into the VIP lounge or
exactly.
whatever. Yeah. You get like bottle service for free for the rest of the night.
Exactly. So she does a sick dance. She gets all the scale votes and gets a VIP wristband.
Of course.
And she's like, oh boy, my master's really going to think I'm super cool. He also gets a VIP wristband. Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's the chaperone, so
yeah,
they have to let him in legally.
Exactly. And so when they get there, let's see, rare and sort.
Yeah.
So they get inside, and I think there's all kinds of like rare outfits and garments that can really enhance like your dancing.
Oh,
like
there's like artifacts that only the winners of this
exactly.
scale contest
there
get
are a bunch
to.
Of merchants there selling swag and they're like, this scarf will really bring back the dead.
They're selling the like Kanye West like Jesus is King
yes,
clothes with
these,
the weird
like,
stretched out MS Paint graphics on
exactly.
them.
Exactly. And so they're selling all this stuff and she really wants to impress this guy. And so she like definitely spends way too much of her
cool.
money
yeah.
on buying this like unnecessary stuff.
Yeah.
And so
but it's like limited edition, you know.
Exactly.
If she doesn't buy it here, she'll never have another chance to buy it. These,
exactly. And so then the time comes for the big special VIP party
mm-hmm.
and she is all dressed up with her new outfit stuff that she got and she is ready to impress this guy.
Is there a fashion montage at any point during this?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, good.
Yep.
Good. There has
it's
to
like
be.
All the camels coming out for a public affair
yes.
all night. That's
exactly.
right. All the camels coming out. Yeah, so she
this is a joke that all of our listeners will get.
Definitely not. Anyway, so she dances to the camel song and she's ready. I think in the VIP lounge, when they're all there hanging out, there is another limited opportunity because it seems like pretty much 50-50. Half of the people attending this get to go into the VIP lounge.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I suppose by definition it
but
would be 50-50.
But
yeah, with the scales. Yeah.
So they need to sort out who the lucky few are who get to come and meet the Scroll
so
Master.
So there's another... Maybe there's multiple stages of the dancing competition, so they continue to do
exactly.
this.
Exactly. It's like this huge yeah. dance-off. And I think what they do is they decide there's one night before the big night of the event where they do this night-long dance-off, as they usually do,
mm-hmm.
and they say a spirit will choose a lucky, like one person will be chosen to go forth and meet with the Scroll Master who is summoned from this dance. And so everyone dances their hardest, and she does not get chosen,
ooh,
but
okay.
someone else is, and that individual gets to go forward. But this means that she gets to stay behind and hang out with her master. And I think during this time, she feels embrazened. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Emboldened.
Emboldened, yes. Yeah. Emboldened by the atmosphere. And she...
And her fancy new outfit.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think she tries to flirt with him and he sees what she's doing. And he very gently shuts her down. And she's really hurt at first. I think for a day, she kind of avoids him. But then later he finds her and he's like, hey, that's... Like, I'm sorry, but... You know, you're better. You know what's good. Like, you're super popular and cool, and
you
you're gonna
have
do great.
Any guy in the cult, if you want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she gets picked up by the vibes of the whole party, and she's like, you know what? You're right. I'm sorry. Like, I still have a crush on you. I'm not. That's gonna take a
We're
while to change.
We're in full fan fiction mode right now.
Oh yeah. And she's like, but like, it's cool that you don't like me. I'm gonna find another guy who does. And he's like, great. I'm proud of you.
Okay.
And they party all night.
I like this. It's a happy ending.
Yeah. Anyway.
Bit
of a tangent. Your turn. What'd you get?
I may just turn this happy ending a little bit sour here.
Did you get a wrench?
Because I got Battle Royale.
Oh.
Which means
time to fight.
That our heroes have to fight each other. Yeah.
Interesting.
Exactly. I haven't given my merchant a name. I think I'll name him Saeed after my awesome cuisine inspired.
There you go.
A merchant warrior beguiling man with a silver tongue.
Yeah. We have Saeed and we have
Saeed and Calliope.
Calliope.
Yeah, Saeed and Calliope.
Very nice.
So, okay, let's maybe establish right off the bat here. Battle Royale doesn't necessarily have to mean a fight to the death. I think it could equally be a battle of wits or they face off in some way, right?
So here's something
I think if it is a fight,
yes.
Calliope would win. But if it's like me trying to convince you of something,
well,
I would win.
Okay,
yeah.
Here's the thing, Sam. When I mentioned that she like gets conned by the merchants selling all the garbs.
Yeah.
I was like, well, maybe one of those merchants
Saeed is one of them.
Yeah, maybe he's the one who's like, who beguiles her into, he's like, oh, if you buy this outfit, you're definitely going to make your teacher like you. Yeah. So maybe you win automatically.
If you buy this like medieval, like sexy schoolgirl outfit, yeah, your professor's definitely
going to
break
tap
his code
that.
Of ethics. Yes, exactly. So I think that was kind of what I was thinking too, is probably if they ever did have to fight, Saeed would have the ability to trick her into not fighting, or be like, you know, we don't need to fight. He would have some way of kind of playing outside of the rules.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think at this stage in her life, she's still rather impressionable.
Yeah, she's younger and naive. And
you have this gift of the silver tongue, so I think if this is the situation, you would definitely win.
I think Calliope is kind of like the perfect mark for someone like Saeed, that they're just younger and like not really super experienced in the world. They don't have, you know, she's not in sales. Mm-hmm. You know, she doesn't really know how to look out for people who are trying to manipulate her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would have to agree with that. I think Saeed would kind of have it.
But I think
this marks a rare event in which one of my creations trumps one of yours.
Hooray! Yeah. Hey, congrats. Yeah. I think, though, this walking away from this whole event, she definitely learns from a lot of the things that she did. She learns that if somebody turns down your affections, it's not the end of the world, and you respect them and move on. She learns that just because a salesman tells you a scarf will make a guy like you doesn't mean that it's true, but you still walk away with a pretty garment.
I love this Disney Channel original movie ending of this. We all learn a lesson. It's
a
happy
ending.
We've
spent a whole month of doing sad, gore, depressing stuff. I'm trying to lighten it up a little bit.
We do need to have a happy ending on this one. You're right, I think.
I think, yeah. So she walks away from this and she's like, cool. Like, I'm going to dance super hard 5 years from now, and I'm definitely going to meet that scroll master.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. And I like that there is a long-term goal for your character, for Calliope, to achieve greatness within this religion.
I think
Saeed has the same thing, that, you know, the whole thing is just about achieving wealth for this god. That's how you advance in the church, and that's how you impress this god and gain more power. And so the more wealth that he gets, the better he gets at kind of manipulating people.
Definitely.
And maybe I think the interesting story there again is that he has the ability to manipulate kind of anyone he comes across, except for the people that are really close to him. So he still has to keep this a secret from his family. And that would maybe be a really fun thing to revisit on, you know, in a future episode or something.
Well, totally. Well, that's what I was going to ask, is like, if you had any insight on, does he make progress on getting his family to pray as well?
I don't think so. I don't think that there's any way that his family is going to bend without some kind of really powerful outside influence. You know, maybe if he could do some kind of like three-dimensional chess move where he could destroy all of their livelihoods, and he could cut off all of their ties to, you know, their merchant connections and things like that, they would be forced to utilize his tactics.
Well, that's what I was thinking, is that it would have to come to him like twisting an arm, essentially, like giving them an ultimatum. It's like, this person, like your daughter, my cousin will die unless you like pray to this god.
It's him going from the, you know, the Walter White at the beginning of Breaking Bad, where he first is saying, you know, I'm doing this for my family. I'm only going to manipulate bad people. And by the end of it, he's like poisoning kids and
that's a great comparison.
Tricking his family into doing things for him that involve
now I hate him.
But talk about an interesting character arc, right? I mean, as Walter White is supposed to be unlikable, right? And I think Saeed maybe is more interesting as an unlikable character than he is as a really heroic character.
Definitely.
So that's cool.
I
think this is great.
I think this is great too.
We've done some cool stuff here.
I would freaking die to go to a couture dance party.
Quarter rave party or whatever.
Exactly.
And, yeah, sounds by amazing. Quarters couture.
Exactly. Oh, so fun. I like that I had this like happy girl character.
Yeah.
I think my stuff usually tends to go on the darker side. So this is nice, refreshing.
It is nice and refreshing. Yeah. I think it's funny that people have commented about that too. Like on Twitter, people have been like, oh my God, Piper like really went there. And I'm always kind of like, usually I'm the one that I always feel like I'm the one.
Yeah,
in our private lives, I am the one that's, you know, I'm a big Dark Souls kind of guy, you know? My soul is sufficiently dark.
Oh, Sam will make an inappropriate joke and I'm like, whoa, Sam.
I've never done that. I think we've got some good stuff here.
Very cool.
So let's go ahead and move on to
our rec room.
Our rec room cool. here. And Piper, I think you have our rec room recommendation taken care of this week. What are we going to talk about? What should our listeners go and take a look at as soon as they're done listening to our podcast?
Of course. Well, if you want to be able to create original paladins and priests and characters who pray to gods like ours, but you're struggling
gods themselves.
Exactly, but you're struggling to come up with a deity to pray to, use the site that we used for this episode, which is just called chaoticshiny.com.
Yeah.
I found this literally by googling D&D deity generator, and it was like the third option that came up, but they have a ton of other things.
You never go with the first or second option. That's like rule one.
Exactly. You got to scroll down a little bit, get past all the paid for ads. Yeah. But they have everything here, and it says on their homepage that it's all about, like, if you're a creator and you just need a little way to spice things up, this is a website that will generate all kinds of things for you. They have people, civilizations, taverns, religions, weapons, anything. So check that out.
Yeah, it seems like a really cool resource that you can fill in a lot of gaps in your world, you know, and things that you can easily take for granted, you know, names of taverns, or you said like laws are one of them, like little
exactly.
things that you can use to kind of throw a wrench in the gears.
Yeah.
I think that's such a helpful thing to have. It's sort of like the super high volume version of what we try to do on this show.
Exactly.
Is kind of just give you something else to throw into the mix. So that's a really, really cool resource. And we'll be sure to have links to that in the show notes.
Definitely.
So beyond that, we also have, that's our really only recommendation this week. We can hop on over to the Thank Tank, I think, here, Piper, which also you have on lockdown this week. I'm just going to sit back and watch.
I could hand it over to you. I mean, do you remember his name?
I do remember the name. Yeah,
why don't you say it?
Aaron Cray, right? Aaron Crary? Aaron Cray? You should pull up the actual Twitter.
It's Aaron Crary.
Aaron Crary.
His name on Twitter is A.A. Cray.
A.A. Cray. Left us a really nice comment on Twitter this week, just saying that, you know, he'd been listening to the show and had a really great time and thought we were a good resource for people looking for inspiration. And that really just means a lot to us.
It really brightens our day.
It does.
It's great. It made us so happy.
So if you are enjoying the show, please feel free to reach out to us and let us know. We'll give you a shout out on the show. We'll retweet your tweets. We'll get people
to sign your dark book.
Exactly. Yeah, we will like, comment, and subscribe. We'll smash that like button. We'll do whatever it takes to try and make your day in return, because, you know, we really just started this as something to have fun doing as kind of a hobby for ourselves, and it's been so exciting to see that people actually enjoy this nonsense that we're creating for you guys. So
yeah.
If you do want to tell us how much you love us, Piper, where can they find us?
They can find us on Twitter at WorldForgePod. Mm-hmm. They can also email us at WorldForgePod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And we are on all the major streaming sites for podcasts.
Yes.
Go to your local library and find us.
Yeah, exactly.
Your local podcast library.
And we also are actually newly on Stitcher as well. So if you really want to support the show in a totally free way, please feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. That is the easiest way that you can support us. It just goes so far towards getting our podcast in front of the ears of new listeners. And it really is exciting for us to read those reviews. It's very fun. We'll give you a shout out just like we did for our buddy Aaron Crary.
Yeah, thanks, A.A. Ron.
So, yeah, that's about all we have, I think, for you this week. Next week, we will be back again talking about something else.
Uh-huh. But the classic way we end the show.
The classic way.
Saying that we're going to talk about something, not this.
Generally, we don't know what it is until about an hour before we record. So, but we will go ahead and be back for you next week. Thanks again for listening, and goodbye.
Yeah. Bye.